He's my next guest, who has served the people of Florida's 19th congressional district since 2020. He serves on the House Committee and Oversight and Government Reform and is now running in Florida's Republican gubernatorial primary. Please welcome back to Straight Shooter with yours truly, Representative Byron Donalds out of Florida. What's up, Big Tom? How are you, man? How you doing?
Stephen A., good to be back with you, my friend. Good seeing you.
Hey, listen, I just before I even get into the politics, I just want to give you an opportunity to disassociate yourself from being a Cowboys fan so bad luck doesn't rain all over you as you run in for the gubernatorial seat in Florida. You don't want to do that to yourself, man. Don't you want to win? Isn't America, don't you want to win, Representative Donald? Don't you want to win?
Of course I want to win, Stephen A., but I don't even know why we got to start talking about football right now. That was inappropriate and uncalled for. We were here talking about the business of America, the business of the people of Florida. You want to bring the Cowboys into it. I don't even know why we started this way. Let's take it back from the top.
Sure.
We ready? Okay, on you.
On me. I see how you slickly don't want to answer that daggone question because they ain't going to win. But that's neither subject here nor there. Let me ask you this. When you think about right now, you're in the lead. Everybody's looking at you and they're saying that it appears inevitable that you're going to win the Republican nominee and ultimately the governorship, the gubernatorial seat for the state of Florida. Your thoughts right now on where you're sitting in this race for governor of Florida and why you believe you're there?
Well, first of all, I take nothing for granted. We've been in 62 of the 67 counties. We're doing 3 to 4 political events a day, not to mention all of the other events with small business leaders, pastors, nonprofit groups all across Florida. And so we've been taking this message of affordability, getting prices down in our state, but also keeping the Florida dream alive and well. What has made so many people desire to move to Florida, we want to keep that vision and that dream alive and well. It has gone incredibly well. We have great support all through the state. Obviously, the endorsement of President Trump, our former governor, current Senator Rick Scott, most of the members of the congressional delegation, 43 of our sheriffs in Florida support our campaign, but it's been about the people of Florida. And so, Stephen A., when I haven't been in Washington, D.C., I've been crisscrossing the state talking to the people of Florida, and it has been resonating. Our poll numbers are very, very strong. But again, you take nothing for granted, even though we have a sizable polling lead. We've been all over Florida in a closing message, getting out the vote to earn that from the voters in our state. And last thing I'll add, we've knocked over 500,000 doors around our state going directly to the voters to earn their support.
You're running for the replace Governor Ron DeSantis, of course, who's term limited. DeSantis' second-in-command, Lieutenant Governor Jay Collins, former Florida House Speaker Paul Renner, and businessman James Fishback are also in the Republican field. What do you believe separates your vision from theirs?
Well, first, it's about making sure that we balance growth with also our natural beauty in our state. We have to make sure we figure out how young people are going to build housing and have the housing that they need while protecting Florida's ag lands and our waterways. But I will tell you what's also happened is that over the last 6 years, the people of Florida have seen me as one of the most prominent conservative voices and leaders in Washington, D.C. And so when they're thinking about electing the next governor, what they're saying is that we know that Byron is committed to law and order, common sense, limited government, low taxes, and then also making sure that our environment remains pristine. These are the building blocks of what has made Florida the envy of the other 49 states. And so they already have that familiarity with me and that comfort with me. And then as the campaign process has unfolded, we've done Q&As in all part of Florida. We've really talked to the people directly about their concerns, and we've been able to build on that support every single month leading up to the primary election, which is in 6 days.
Representative Donald, what's the biggest problem in Florida today that you believe this administration, meaning the DeSantis administration, did not solve during his 8-year tenure? How would you answer that question?
It's not so much about things that didn't get solved. It's about what needs to still get done. And I'll talk about insurance. The governor and the legislature did great work in tort reform in our state. We're starting to see those prices those prices with respect to the cost of litigation come down in Florida. But we still have to reform the regulatory side of Florida's insurance market. This is something that hasn't been done since we created our CAT fund after Hurricane Andrew in our state back in 1992. Mm-hmm. And so that does need to be reformed. And the truth is that insurance rates in our state have always been relatively cheap until the last 5 to 6 years. And so I'm going to take my business acumen. I spent 17 years in the business world in the financial industry, coupled with the fact that I did chair the insurance and banking subcommittee when I served in the Florida House 7 years ago, and I know what needs to be done in order to reform that system. So if you take the tort reform Governor DeSantis brought, coupled with real regulatory reform that's long overdue, we think we can push insurance rates down 20 to 25% in our state. The second thing is around what it takes to build housing. The National Association of Home Builders came out earlier this year and said 30% of the cost of building a new home is government costs, government permitting, government timelines. That is basically baked into the cake when somebody wants to go buy a home. So we need to actually leverage technology to be more efficient, squeeze those timelines down, push those costs down, because the developers don't pay it, the contractors don't pay it, the hardworking men and women of our state, they pay that price. And so we want to reform that system to push down construction costs. And I think by doing those two, those are major things that can get done to help improve the affordability for people in Florida.
Well, let's stick with housing, because I'm going to bring up property tax. Taxes here. Floridians, you know, hear politicians promise lower property taxes all the time. I'm wondering what your actual plan is, and how do you cut poor property taxes without blowing a hole in local funding for police, firefighters, schools, etc.? How do you answer that?
Well, great question. First, this is on the ballot this November right now. The people of Florida are going to decide this, not the governor, not the potential nominee for governor. The voters are going to decide this November. The property tax amendment, I support it. I think our people in Florida need real relief. But whether it passes or fails, Stephen A., every 20 years in Florida's constitution is the Tax and Budget Reform Commission. We are going to use that reform commission to study our taxing system top to bottom in our state, and also all fees. We want to have a goal of eliminating homestead property taxes once and for all, while also making sure the revenue is there for public safety, road construction, and road maintenance, and the other essential services that local governments do provide. And I believe that through that commission, we'll be able to strike that balance. And if we can't get a full repeal of homestead done, the target is going to be real relief for seniors who were on fixed income and working families in our state. And Stephen A., we know this, if you're a senior on fixed income, you're a working family, I mean, you're not living in $1 million house. So there's ways that we can target that segment of our population, make sure they get real relief, and then restructuring some of the revenue side to make sure that local government has the resources that they need.
As we sit here tonight, Representative Donald, what do you believe matters to Floridians most? What's at the top of their list more so than anything else?
They want the quality of life in Florida that they've come to know. They want that to continue. And that's part affordability. It's the things we've already talked about. It's also health care and health insurance. Let's be very clear. The Affordable Care Act is not working. It's actually been a failure. Deductibles are rising in the United States. Premiums are rising in the United States. So in Florida, our answer to help the things that we can control is true price transparency. We want to have the top 20 procedures in any doctor's office, any hospital. We want the real cash price posted so people are able to get the health care that they need at a price that they can afford. We also want to help seniors be able to access pharmaceuticals using Trump RX, allow them to access pharmaceuticals at a much cheaper cost. But for Floridians, they love our state. They want to continue to be able to afford Florida. And I think there are concrete solutions that I have that will help our citizens afford Florida into the future. Because let's be clear, man, everybody loves the Sunshine State. They love coming here. I remember when you used to talk about back all the time during the NBA playoffs yes. for a couple decades now, yes. you would always want the NBA you would be rooting for the Miami Heat because yes. you would want to be in Miami. Yes. I remember this, my friend.
Well, you should remember
so
this part.
You want to make sure.
You should remember this part. I wasn't lying because I moved to Florida. I bought a house down there. ain't nobody going to be phony. I'm not going to be phony about it. I got a crib in Florida because I love the state.
That's right.
So go ahead. Let me not be phony here. I got to put myself on Front Street. Damn right. I backed up my words. I moved down there. Damn right. And I ain't apologizing.
But this is what I'm talking about. No, but you're right, though. People love Florida. This is the reason why, with all the stuff going on in New York, New Jersey, Chicago, Connecticut, Massachusetts, California, Oregon, Washington State, people are leaving those states. Americans are leaving those states, and they're saying, you know what? I got to get to Florida. And so the question for us is, how do we balance people continuing to choose our state while also protecting the quality of life in the Florida dream that our people love?
Put into your words, Representative Donald, why are people leaving those states specifically?
Because of crazy policy from the Democrats. The Democrats have lost the plot. And listen, this is not the Democrat Party of JFK. This is now the Democrat Party of AOC and Bernie Sanders and Mamdani. And they're just crazy. Their policy doesn't make any sense. Even if you just start with basic cultural items, we all see what's going on with the WNBA right now. Men don't belong competing against women. We're bigger, stronger, and faster. There's no disrespect to the female athletes at the professional level, at the college level, at the high school level, at the middle school level. But the truth is, boys are bigger, stronger, and faster. And you have Democrats who still think that's okay. You have David Jolly, who looks like I'm going to be running against
Yes,
to lead
I was going to
Florida
bring him
into the
up.
future. He still believes it's okay to transgender kids. That's craziness. Even the American Medical Association has finally seen the light and seen the reality and said, you know what? Yeah, that's crazy. We should not be doing gender reassignment surgeries on minors. That's craziness. At least let them become full adults. And as a full adult, if you want to do that, I don't agree with you, but that's your business. And that's not something you do for kids. So people are already seeing those cultural issues. But then when you come to the economy, Stephen Day, I'm hearing the Democrats now say that they have the solution to fix affordability. Now, how are you going to hire the person that set the fire to put out the fire? The reason that inflation has wrecked our country is because of Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, and Democrat policy when they were in charge. And that's an unmitigated fact, Stephen A.
Well,
Those are the facts.
I'm not challenging that that part is true. What I'm challenging is that it started with them. We got $39 trillion in debt. Every administration
Yes.
has run up. It was Reagan. It was HW. It was Clinton, even though he departed with a surplus. But it was W. It was Obama before Trump, and then Biden took it to another level. Nobody's hands are clean when it comes to contributing to the debt in this country. So when you say it's Kamala, it's Biden, it's those policies, etc., I'm not saying you're wrong, but is that not a bit disingenuous when we put it on them when there were Republicans in office over the last 30 years plus as well?
Two things, real quick. Number
Sure.
one, when Joe Biden and Kamala brought the American Rescue Plan, they were told by Larry Summers, who was Barack Obama's economic advisor and Bill Clinton's economic advisor, and they were told that it would create a massive inflation. And we all seen what's happened since then. But if you're talking about the national debt, I agree with you, it's completely out of control. I'm the sponsor of the bill that would have cut the most money ever that hit the floor of the House of Representatives. It would have cut year-over-year spending by 30%. And also secured our nation's borders in the same bill. But the biggest problem has always been the United States Senate, because you cannot get Democrat senators in the US Senate who are committed to cutting spending. We can pass spending bills out of the House that cut spending and reform some of the structural issues all day long out of the House of Representatives. But because of the filibuster in the United States Senate, there are Democrat senators who refuse, Stephen A., to do what is right when it comes to the budget and the spending of this country.
But Representative Donald, respectfully, Donald Trump spends a lot of money his damn self. I mean, we can't deny that now. I mean, he's contributed to the debt as well. What do you say to somebody that looks at the president who obviously has endorsed you and you're a strong supporter of his, and they say, wait a minute, he's guilty of the same things you're accusing Democrats of? How do you respond to that?
And my response is a couple. Number one, some of the biggest parts of the debt under President Trump was the response to COVID-19. When the entire world's economy shut down, Donald Trump and members on both sides of the aisle on Capitol Hill, they said, you know what? We're going to provide aid and relief to the people of our country while most of the country was shut down. And so that was where most of that debt comes from. People might try to, quibble about that, but at that time period, we all acknowledge that when the economy was flat on its back because the world was closed, except in Florida, by the way, but when the world was closed, what happened? You had to find a way to help people continue to make ends meet. And so the nation's debt rose as a response to that. If you look at the other aspects of the president's time in office, his debt level really hasn't exploded that much more than any other president. The Democrats like to criticize the first Trump tax cuts in his first time in office. They say that it cost $2 trillion. Well, that's what CBO said in their estimate. But Stephen A., in terms of actual cash dollars coming in, the federal government raised $3 trillion more than was anticipated because of the president's tax cut policy. So how does something that the budget counter say is going to cost $2 trillion, mm-hmm. and then when we look at the facts and we look at the receipts, $3 trillion more has been raised than they ever accounted for?
Well, let's be,
sounds like it paid for itself to me.
Let's be clear. I was born at night, not last night, so I know better than debating you on some of these issues, because I know you've forgotten more than I know on this stuff. But in the same breath, I have a little knowledge of math, my man. I mean, I'm thinking about the war with Iran and how nearly $40 billion has been spent, how you had the Department of War Secretary Pete Hegseth asking for additional dollars that was going to bump it to over $104 billion. They've already spent $37.5 billion. I'm also thinking about Trump and how he's spending nearly $1 billion in taxpayer money for White House renovations. I mean, when we bring this kind of stuff up, and not only that, I mean, just looking at it right now, President Trump's proposed fiscal year 2027 defense budget is at $1.5 trillion. I mean, do we leave that out when you're pointing to spending being a problem to the man that's in the White House?
No, I don't think you want to leave that out. The one thing I'll change on the graphic is that the $1.5 trillion is not for the war with the Iranians.
Okay.
Actually the $37 billion number. The $1.5 trillion is actually to retool our military and prepare it for the future.
Okay.
One thing about what we've seen in military operations is that drone warfare has changed everything. If you look at how long this war has gone on between Ukraine and Russia, the reason it's gone on this long is because the Ukrainians have learned to use drone technology in order to defend their country and to be able to fight back against the Russians. And so what's happening in the background with, frankly, militaries all around the world is they are looking at what it's going to take to essentially retool your military for what is now being looked at as in part drone warfare and other forms of technological warfare. And so you're having to look at the stuff we already have in our stock. I don't want to get into too many details because some of this is classified, but there is stuff that we have in our arsenal, which is still useful today, but we're having to prepare for the future. And that's the $1.5 trillion that the Department of War and the Trump administration is talking about. It's about preparing America's military to be able to keep pace and continue to be the elite military fighting force on the face of the planet.
Representative Byron Donald out of Florida right here with Stephen A., straight shooter with Stephen A. I want to go back to the Affordable Care Act that you said was an abject failure. Yeah. Going back to that, 20 to 24 million additional American citizens ended up being insured. Based on what I read, that number could be wrong. You would know it mm-hmm. better than me, but that's what mm-hmm. they're saying. When you consider the fact that there's poor and desolate individuals that didn't have health care, that ultimately had health care because of the Affordable Care Act, along with the fact that you had even red states that were obviously benefiting from the Affordable Care Act, is it fair to designate it a failure considering that reality and how there were millions upon millions of Americans who didn't have health care that ultimately ended up benefiting from the Affordable Care Act?
I designate it as a failure because the 20 million people, I'm going to use your number, 24 million Americans being able to get insurance coverage today in the federal marketplace run by the Affordable Care Act. But what we have seen over the last 15 years since its creation, premiums have skyrocketed. Deductibles have skyrocketed. So even the people who are getting that coverage on the ACA, they don't have the disposable income to access the deductibles. Mm. So you really don't even have a health insurance plan. You have a piece of paper that says you're covered. We already know that there are Americans who are now skipping that coverage because of its prohibitive costs. And then we have what happened under the Biden administration, and this was a fight late last year, about the enhanced Affordable Care Act subsidies. And my Democratic colleagues, they were saying, well, we need to keep those subsidies in place. But what was going to happen, regardless of the subsidy staying in place, the premium and the deductible for these policies was going to continue to increase because the regulatory side of the Affordable Care Act is so cumbersome, it artificially is increasing the cost of health insurance and healthcare in this country. So what myself and many of my Republican colleagues have been advocating for, and going back to the Senate, we could pass it out of the House tomorrow. The Senate Democrats will never touch it because they don't want to admit the reality that premiums and deductibles have skyrocketed on hardworking families in our country. The people who are getting the best deal in healthcare today are people who work for large companies in group insurance. The people who are struggling the most, typically small business owners trying to get insurance for their employees. They got five people, seven people, and individuals who are in the gig economy. They're doing DoorDash, they're doing Uber, and a bunch of other things, who are now trying to go into the exchanges, and the prices are out of control. It needs real reform. This system is not working. And I'll add, Stephen A., even when the Democrats at that time pushed the Affordable Care Act, you had some progressive Democrats who were saying the quiet part out loud, that this was a conduit to single-payer health care, because they knew that the regulatory framework was going to lead to higher costs to the point where people would get frustrated and exacerbated, and then politicians would come around in the future talking about we need to do Medicaid for all. That's what Bernie Sanders and AOC are arguing for right now, Medicaid for all. We already have government-run health care in this country. It's called the VA. It's not working for our veterans who laid everything on the line. Why would we give the entire American health care system to the government? I don't think that's the right way to go. We need to have common sense reforms that allow people to buy insurance products that they're looking for, not having a regulatory system forcing products onto the American people that they're forced to buy. And that's what the Affordable Care Act does, and that's why the prices continue to go up.
Just a few more questions for Representative Byron Donald out of the 19th District of Florida, right here on Straight Shooter with yours truly, Stephen A. Save America Act. Donald Trump has been fixated on this. He seems to be fixated on it. Are you? Are other Republicans?
Yes.
Are folks just doing it because of something he wants?
No. We are all fixated on it. The Save America Act was actually originally drafted by my friend Chip Roy out of Texas. The point of the bill is to do a couple of things. Number one, more controls around mail-in balloting. Number two, requiring that you have to show a photo ID to vote. And number three, that you have to prove to be an American before you get put on our voting rolls. That's all common sense stuff. This is why 80% of the American people support it. The only group in our country that don't want this to happen are elected Democrats and the Democrat Party. They're the only ones. You talk to Black people in this country, Hispanic people in this country, white people, rich or poor, living in the North, living in the South, living out West. Everybody wants it, except if you're an elected Democrat. The question is why. And I know why. Because the rules that are happening, the rules happen in these other states make it easier to cheat. You saw what happened when they were doing the mayoral race in California. It took them 3 weeks to count the ballots. Man, that's crazy. Americans would not tolerate that in our sports. But we let that happen in our politics with the most sacred franchise the American people have. So it's not just something that the president wants to see happen. Myself, my colleagues on Capitol Hill, Republicans, we all want to see it happen. And the group of people who hold it up are Senate Republicans. They hold it up. And they say they won't vote for it because they don't want to change voting procedures and they don't want to protect the franchise of voting for the American people.
There are Blacks and an abundance of minorities in this country that would probably agree with most of what you said, but their cynicism is raised. It's elevated exponentially when it comes to this president because there's an absence of trust where he is concerned. And anything that he wants desperately enough might raise proverbial eyebrows. Whether that's fair or not is something that can be debated another day, but it's a reality. And as an individual that's a representative in the United States Congress, who is a Black man, who is about to, I think, is going to win the gubernatorial. So I think you're going to be the next governor of Florida, to be quite honest with you. I'm wondering how you feel about that as a Black man, to see individuals, American citizens in this country, of your ethnicity, of your hue, feeling such negativity towards somebody you have unapologetically endorsed religiously and who endorses you. How do you feel about that?
It's not about feel, Stephen A. It's something that I acknowledge. I would challenge Black people in America. Number one is, first of all, it ain't even about trust. It's about verification. We've had people on both sides of the aisle promise Black people everything until the cows come home. But it's really about, are you going to verify the promises and verify what the policies actually do? Or are you just going to trust it because you have comfort level with a certain politician? I know when it comes to me, my view is, let me see what you say you're going to do, and then I'm going to look at the policy for myself. When the president talks about securing the borders and closing them, Black people in America can clearly see that when Joe Biden let these borders wide open, that was the craziest thing he could have ever done to our country.
I agree.
Look at all the young girls who were killed as a result. Look at the young immigrant girls who were sold into sex slavery coming across our borders. That's just policy that don't make no sense. So why would you support a politician just because you feel good about that person when the policy that they're executing is actually a detriment to our country and to, quite frankly, cities all across America? I'll give you one from President Trump. In One Big Beautiful Bill, he talked about it on the campaign trail and he got it done. No tax on tips, no tax on overtime, the largest tax cut on Social Security in America's history. And I'll do you one more than that. Schedule 199A, small business taxes. For Black people in our country who own small businesses, the Democrat Party voted to watch your small business taxes increase because they just wanted to stop Donald Trump. Like, how crazy is that? So if you're a small business owner and you're trying to do everything you can do to keep your business open and keep it afloat, Donald Trump said, hey, we're going to help you keep more money in your business. The Democrats said, no, we're going to let those taxes raise up. If you're a waitress or if you're somebody who's on tip share, Donald Trump said, you know what? We're not going to tax those tips. Keep that in your pocket. Keep that for your family. Keep that for your children. The Democrats said, no, we're not going to do that. When it comes to people on Social Security, he said, we want to make sure that people on Social Security get the biggest tax cut they can possibly get, especially those who are living paycheck to paycheck on that Social Security check. The Democrats said no. So I'm in the verification business. Understood. I'm in the fact business. And I think that voters in our country, especially Black voters in our country, I hear so much from a lot of people, Stephen, I've heard you say about it. You keep voting for the Democrat Party, but what have they done for you?
Yeah, you heard me.
What have they actually done?
You heard me asking
except,
that question. You heard me
asking that question.
I ain't apologizing for it. I'm very skeptical about them. Make no mistake about it. I mean, I've lost interest in them in a lot of different ways. I'll be the first to admit it right here on the public airwaves. But I also am trying to be fair-minded when I think about this. All of the things that you said, point taken. But there are also other things. You think about DEI and the rollbacks and that. You think about how that's been attached and associated to the Black community. You think about access to Black history and how it has been felt that has been tried, at least attempted to be compromised by the part of this administration. You see affordability becoming an issue more and more every single day. You see small businesses, particularly Black businesses in the country, and they look at it and they say, wait a minute, we thought he was going to do something, and we're seeing the larger corporations be fed to some degree. All of these things they say, and then they look at somebody like you, who's on the verge of being the next governor of the third largest state in the union, third or fourth largest state in the union, and they're saying, Byron Donner, you're attached to the hip with this guy, and that makes them skeptical of you. When everything you're saying makes perfect sense to me, how do you respond to those things, knowing that there's a community that you come from that has such skepticism about him and as a result are having it about you?
I would tell them to look at the policies that I support and the legislative record behind them. Again, verification. This is not about what somebody might say on social media, what somebody else might talk about with me. Verify it for yourself and take a look at it. When I talk about a launchpad initiative in our K-12 education system in the state of Florida, the purpose is to make sure that if a child is not going to college, and there's nothing wrong with that, if the child's not going, let's make sure that they get partnered up with a company so they can get the apprenticeship or the internship they need so they can hit the ground running after high school graduation and really put food on the table. That's stuff that I'm proposing in Florida. That will help so many children who are in our education system right now, Black children and other children. When I talk about looking for ways to push down insurance costs, the insurance company doesn't care what color you are. Are you going to reform the system to push down costs? That's verification that people can see. When I talk about making it easier to build housing in our state, the same thing. That impacts everybody. Even if you're going to be a renter, if it's easier to build the building, if it's cheaper to build the building, then your rent is cheaper. And so these are the policies that I'm talking about. At a federal level, Stephen A., let's take a look at regulation. President Trump has been cutting regulation regulations. A lot of those regulations impact small business owners. They also impact large business owners. But regulation is actually a barrier to entry for small businesses to be able to grow, because a large business, they can hire the people to do all the regs. Mm-hmm. So when you're cutting regulations, that directly impacts them. I'll give you one more. My time in Congress, and we get the budget bills passed through, I've always advocated for an increase in small bank holding company capital. Mm-hmm. What that means is that you can have more community banking in our country. Since Dodd-Frank was passed in 2008, and it became law in 2009, since Dodd-Frank was passed, we have seen a decrease in community banking in the United States by over 80%. And so we're wondering why small black businesses are struggling trying to find capital, because you're not going to get capital from Citibank or Wells Fargo or Bank of America. You're just a number to them. Mm-hmm. You're a number to those large banks. What you need is a community bank. But when Dodd-Frank came in and small banks really plummeted and got sold off to larger banks, it decreased access to capital in so many communities. So what I advocated for was raising the small cap bank threshold from $3 billion to $25 billion. That way you can have more community banks and more communities who can build relationships with small business owners. You know who fought me on that policy more than anybody else? The Democrats. Because they said, well, we just don't feel good about letting a small bank be able to escape Dodd-Frank up to $25 billion. And my response was, nobody cares about your feelings. These small businesses are trying to get access to capital to grow their companies. So while you're worried about your feelings on Capitol Hill, we got small business owners in Miami, in Tampa, in Orlando, in Jacksonville, trying to get access to capital. We've come to an agreement. It looks like we're going to raise it to $12 billion once the budget bills all go through on Capitol Hill, and that will allow more community banking to thrive in our country.
All right.
With community banking thriving in our country, that directly impacts entrepreneurs and small business owners, mm-hmm. a lot of them black in our country, trying to build that Florida dream for themselves.
Last question. You're going to be the next governor of Florida?
Yes.
I just wanted to make sure I had that on the record. My man, I love talking to you. We talk all the time off the record. I appreciate you making time for me. I'm looking forward to sitting down and doing a feature on you so America can learn more about Byron Donald. Make no mistake about it. Proud to know you. Appreciate you, man. Thanks for the education. And we'll talk soon down the road, all right? You take care of yourself. Thanks for the time.
Appreciate you, brother. Talk soon.
One and only Byron Donald, representative, 19th District out of Florida. He's the real deal. Make no mistake about it. I've seen him battling with Democrats. I've seen him battling with people on different shows, whatever. He ain't backing up. He knows his stuff, okay? I talk to him all the time. And I ain't got nothing bad to say about him. I'm being straight with you. And I ain't no damn Republican. But damn it, if anybody could make me one, it would be him. I'm just going to keep it a buck. I'm just letting you know.